Hello and welcome to a brand new week and a brand new episode of the Deliberate Talks podcast. And I'm your host, Dakshina Dyantaya, here again to talk to individuals that aim to share their learnings and teach us something new every week. And today, we go back to school to unlearn the tactics of how education is foreseen in the modern era of learning. And who better to discover it from than Anand Swamy, who has been leading it for an organization that's changing the landscape with technology and partnerships. Anand is the country head and the sales director at Microsoft India. He also spearheads the P&L for education in India for K-12, higher education and edtech. With over 25 years of experience, Anand has been in the forefront of sales leadership and strategic partnership. In today's episode with Anand, we converse about the dreams and aspirations that drive and nurture the evolving academic surroundings in India thanks to technological advancements. But first, here's a quick intro.
This is the Deliberate Talks weekly podcast, powered by the Pixelated Egg Digital Ventures.
And we are back. Hello, Anand. Welcome to the Deliberate Talks podcast. How are things at your end?
Things are amazing. Thanks so much again, Dakshin. Thanks for the opportunity.
Great. Anand, this is a bit overwhelming for me to meet you virtually and interview you. I'm so used to conversing with you, seeking for guidance always. You want to switch roles today and you want to take over as a host?
Would be great if in case you have, I have no script, so I'll be asking all your special questions then.
Mind-blowing. Great. So before we start this intense conversation, Anand, I want to light up the mood. And I'm going to do that by asking you if SaaS had an alternate full form, what would it be according to you?
I think we should check with the lady who produces some great sitcoms for the Indian tele community. It'll be SaaS B without cloud. SaaS B kabhi bahu thi, like that. Would be SaaS was an on-prem story. It's now a cloud story.
Nice. Now that you're all settled in, let's talk about the world of tech and education. And I'm going to start with asking you, Anand, in your years of experience, can you share some of the significant challenges you have faced while scaling the education business in India?
Actually speaking, tough question to start with, because this is very generic, but a very tough one. The reason why I'm saying is, like, it's very subjective. We speak about, example, you mentioned that I should not use complicated words, but this is one complicated line or word that I want to say is democratization of IT. Hear it very well, and you have to rethink as to what exactly does it mean. It actually means the reach of information technology across citizens and people and everything else. So when you talk to me about what's the challenge that I faced while scaling the business or thinking about education, the first thing is connectivity. The reach, number of people connected, obviously today are connected over mobile phones, internet, and that's doing the works. But think about remote locations, which got impacted heavily during the pandemic time. Right. It still is a big challenge. While we are trying to rethink about how to offer education in remote possible location, it still remains the biggest possible challenge. I think that's the number one thing which even the government is working towards. There are tech companies. You have startup organizations who are really focused on enhancing connectivity to the last possible mile. So that's number one challenge that we face when we were thinking about education and we were thinking about scaling it up in terms of tech reach. Number two, or a very important thing that we have to think, or it is a business which is continuously evolving. Why I'm calling it as businesses, one is for profit and the second one is not for profit. We should not, like, confuse by thinking that, you know, hey, is it only ACAD and everything should be given for free or not? Or should all accessibility come for free or not? Or should IT always be free or not? These thoughts, when it comes, it automatically creates a very challenging situation. You don't look at the trend lines. You don't understand what's changing in the world, not only in India, but worldwide post-pandemic. I think it's been a significant change in terms of how we offer education, the content, the curriculum, the medium, the technology being used. Everything has changed. Yeah. So that's the second big problem of not creating a balance between thinking as to education is for profit or not for profit. If it is not for profit, then probably we should get everything for free. If it is for profit, then we should invest a lot in IT. No. Education is a must for all, one. Number two, use of technology should be as an enabler, not in terms of cost perspective, but what you offer to the end consumers, which will be students, parents, teachers, etc.
Right.
The third bit, which I think is still getting missed, like, you know, post-pandemic, the biggest surge was on adoption of tech. It was not in IT. It was in education. The biggest possible susceptible attacks on security was not in banks. It was identity theft in education. So if you look at the impact that happened there, we just adopted tech only in the time of crisis. And right now we're getting back into normalcy to say that, you know, hey, everything is fine. So, you know, tech, even if I don't adopt, it's absolutely fine.
Right.
So that's the third big possible challenge of adoption of tech into education or its offering, etc. Last bit is very odd one, but when you want to offer as an institute a world-class service or a world-class curriculum and you have a great structure in terms of a fee, etc., and then you have great entrance tests also around that, you should also think that when you're building such a great infra for yourself, you should offer tech kind of capabilities also. If I talk about universities in West, which may be a Harvard or a Kellogg or MIT or anything else, I have met deans, directors, educators, principals, etc., who've studied there. And they expect the same kind of tech to be utilized by them, but at zero cost. So very simply put word, that's why I said it's slightly controversial, is like, you know, tough love. If you want to offer something great through your organization or your institute, etc., adopt. If in case that tech is slightly coming at a price, you have chances of negotiation. You have chances of having a conversation with that vendor, wherever you're seeing. Otherwise, options are tons and plenty. So adopt that mindset of giving world-class services across, whether it is your course, curriculum, infrastructure, type of students that are enrolling in your institute, etc. So these are three or four type of challenges that I probably figured out in my course of time.
Right. Two things I'm going to touch upon. One is the affordability factor, which you spoke about. And one is also from the adoptability factor, which you spoke about. But let's just start with, how can tech really address issues like lack of teachers or infrastructures? Because you spoke about remote accessibility, right? When we saw that schools and universities wanted to kind of get technology into their system to reach out to students during the pandemic, how do you think, you know, the lack of teachers and infrastructure in certain areas across India adapt to this kind of model?
Again, just the way I spoke about adoption of IT, it's adoption of IT and new technologies by teacher, which may create a small sort of divide. I did not see that, you know, teachers were not willing. In fact, you would be surprised to realize that more than 100,000 teachers were getting trained during the time of pandemic every week, every month on new type of technologies, which was hybrid, which was never heard of, which was an online medium of tool where there was dearth of teachers. A single teacher was taking probably extra classes, which were 10 or 20 more than how much he or she would have done in a given point in time. So I would say infrastructure-wise, we have evolved. One, number of teachers, yes, in terms of quality of, or the attributes, now we look at it. Attributes means earlier we wanted to have a teacher who would understand the subject that he or she was teaching. Right now, we need to relook at it by saying that, you know, how much of tech can they adopt in terms of understanding of the whole ecosystem? Because this is no more a student crowd which wants to sit in a class and then listen to the teacher only. Earlier, we had homework, probably in your time, in my time, definitely there was homework where we used to carry our books back home and then do our homework and then come back the next day or within the week. But here, there are online mechanisms where you can store. So technology, again, creates a very important medium there. You can provide homeworks, which are like stored in cloud. You can have classes which are recorded. Right now, you and I are talking over a platform. It's a similar way how a student or a teacher can interact with teacher, have a recorded class and session inside there. That extra class concept goes off then.
Right.
That I missed some part of it, can I refer to it later? Yes, because of the advent of technology and how pervasive it has become. You can access that technology later also. It can be in your archive, you can refer to a lesson, etc., etc.
While you touched upon the interesting part about teachers adopting to it, of course, they had no choice and they were put into a situation and that's also something new for them. What I would love to understand from you is, you know, what about those schools and universities which didn't have access to this kind of infrastructure? you know, even talking about, say, NGOs learn during a situation like pandemic, how do you incorporate tech in an infrastructure where the teachers are not there, or probably, you know, the infrastructure is not there?
So I can help you with some interesting examples as to how, when you're pushed to a corner, how people adopt tech. You would remember Doordarshan has one such channel. I'm calling out name because in one conversation, one of the ministers did mention that, you know, during the time of pandemic, no internet connectivity, but a cable connectivity was there. How did they use one of the band and frequencies to change the channel onto core education? They provided the students with only a keyboard and a mouse. Mm-hmm. The device which was showing TV to them, which was a regular mode of looking or watching, the mother and father used to set time aside to say that 3.5 or 4 hours were given back to the child. And the government could then relay some important messages in those remote locations which did not have an internet connectivity to provide the content to the students there. That's one innovative way of thinking. Second was the oldest possible medium that still exists is radio.
Mm-hmm.
In remote locations, the radio does work if TV doesn't. So that was another medium that was being utilized. A specific channel was dedicated to education and content related to that. Third bit, I think the government thought of a very huge initiative, which is still a mega platform on education, which is being replicated across other countries also, or about to be started, is Diksha as a platform. That's one single platform where the student, teacher, all of them had the attendance management, had daily attendance call being done there. The teachers could submit the reports as to how the class was, etc., run online, etc. The last bit that I want to call here is that particular period where there was no access of education or content also saw the rise of a lot of collaboration tools who understood that there is a challenge in reach, there is a challenge in a remote location, etc. So multiple tools, some of them that were never known of, came into existence during that time. Earlier, there was a point-to-point solution in terms of internet connectivity that was being utilized. That probably we forgot after fiber and everything else came over. Point-to-point connectivity then became extremely critical in, again, remote locations where one particular zone was lighted up and a similar zones were then made to use. CDN as an algorithm was again used to download content at a given specific location, and those machines or smaller packets were then delivered to schools which had to impart education, etc. So I think in times of stress or distress or challenge, we utilize technology in a very different way. And that's what happened there.
Right. And from here, how do you see technologies transforming the education sector in the next decade?
I think technology, one, is evolving. Super important aspect for us to note. Past 22, 24 months has fundamentally changed the education landscape. And if you look at the World Economic Forum, more than 1.2 billion children in 186 countries got impacted due to school closures during pandemic. It's a humongous number that we're talking about.
Right.
Third important bit that I wanted to call out is it's more now moving towards how students learn to create, how they learn by themselves, not with a educator always present 24/7. How teachers are approaching towards learning outcomes, that has also changed. This is again technology changing this particular landscape here. Internet again has made access to education easier than before. Today, I have to call this out that student in tier 2 town can join a course or learn from any teacher across the globe. That's a big shift to very restricted area of education for a tier 2 town student to be focused only on what is available inside the town and probably step out after they are in class 12 or a pre-university and then step out for a higher education when they are in graduation, etc. So this has changed completely. Very large aspect that changed again during the pandemic was you should have seen the Indian edtech industry, which was valued at $750 million in 2020. It's expected to reach $4 billion by 2025. And it's a never heard CAGR of around 39.77%. It's a humongous number when you talk about, like, you know, where you were in 2020 versus what is the focus and forecast in 2020. It's not possible unless and until the technology landscape changed. So earlier, the idea, let me help you understand in a much simpler way. Like, you know, when you were enrolling in a school or a college, it was a terminal, a machine where the executive sitting on the other side would just jot in some important aspects of the student name, the region, and which class and which probably the hostel number, etc. And it was an Excel sheet that was managed.
Right.
In software, we call it as software development lifecycle, SDLC. Mm-hmm. Now, we have got something called as SLCM, which is a student lifecycle management system. And it is not a joke. It is as complicated as an enterprise-grade CRM system. And it tracks a student right from the admission till the time he or she exits that institute or a college. And these are getting, I would say, even more complicated. Because the most important thing that the pandemic made everyone realize is one is connect. Number two is the alumni system. Where did they go? Third one is the learning management module. Are we relevant in today's world to ensure that, you know, hey, are we offering the right set of course content, etc.? There are a few courses which are as mundane as probably running around for 30 years. There has been no change in that.
Right.
The world is moving towards generative AI. But yes, in certain institutes, there are still very core basic concepts of engineering, etc. being demonstrated or delivered. So there was a huge gap that had to be filled up, and technology then became the best possible boon. Where else technology impacted? I'll say political manifestos.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about manifestos, it is a political party calling out what is it that they're going to do good for the citizen. But just think about it that now manifestos include what is it that they can do good for the students, what is it that they can do for the employment, and those employed students will become the citizens of tomorrow who would like then rebuild the entire ecosystem. There are a few states that I can call out in South who adopted this in their manifesto, ran devices program with them, ran certification program, etc. And the number is like astonishing. So these are changes in technology, in trends, etc., which is happening that earlier you might think of a school, institute, organization, etc., adopting very basic level of technology. Some of the institutes have the most complicated aspects of technology today in education. So it has evolved, like it is like consistently evolving, and it has evolved from the place it was probably 5 years back to what it is today.
Right. You know, you mentioned about the term complexity, and complexity and affordability don't go hand in hand. Just given the economic disparities in India, how does one ensure that these products are affordable and more importantly, accessible to the widest range of schools and universities or even students?
So again, the point is very subjective. I will say that, you know, technology, not all complicated technologies are affordable. Tough love is what I called out at the start. The reason why I'm saying is that, you know, what is it that you want to offer today? The choice is unbelievable. The technologies that you use, you're not restricted now. Whether you think about open source, whether you think about technologies like the Git technologies, the GitHub, GitApp, GitLab, etc., which are evolving over a period of time. The kind of startup ecosystem that we have today, which is like, you know, continuously giving you new set of technologies. So affordability actually takes a step back. It's adoption that comes first. If you're willing to adopt technology, you can start with a freemium or a properly free model. And then think about how do you want to move ahead. It's so many institutes who are NGOs or nonprofit organizations don't even reach out to like the core tech organization. When we talk about like large OEMs in today's world, all of the OEMs run program under either CSR or under core education, where a lot of services is given in a partnership for free. There is a partner engagement that you have to do. But the point of view is like, you know, what you want to adopt and do you want to reach out to them?
Right.
Having a mindset that, you know, hey, probably I should not reach out to these organizations because, see, the first question that you ask, well, you know, affordability is a question, but how much did you search for? That is this a real challenge or it is the adoption that's a real challenge? If you don't get into mindset of thinking about I need to adopt education or I need to ensure that tech is an enabler for offering my education services, and here is the list of products and services that's available, that is the first step that you take. So affordability will come in later. As much complicated aspect that you look at in technology is where it gets unaffordable or you need to rethink about how to adopt this when the price is so high. If you're looking at a simpler solution, tons and plenty of companies who want to offer services to students because that's a base for any organization to grow as a future developer for their OEM organization, etc. So I don't think so. It's about affordability. It's about adoption.
Right. Makes sense. And, you know, you even touched upon the government bodies and the educational bodies. And I want to take the step back to, you know, deal with that. You professionally yourself also collaborate with a lot of state agencies, universities, and government bodies. How do you ensure your initiatives are aligned with a broader goal of educational bodies? If you can back that up with an example or so from your previous experiences, it would be one.
I think in today's time, government is extremely proactive and positive towards these. Like most of the institutes that we work or I have worked with in India, I'll be very specific and call out India because one is the NEP 2.0, the National Education Policy. That changed the perspective in terms of courses, curriculum, all of this. And there was a genuine interest from the government bodies to understand what is it that needs to go through a change. How can technology be used as enabler? How can large OEMs contribute in terms of curriculum changes? How can they partner with these large OEMs in terms of offerings, in terms of teacher trainings, in terms of ensuring that the student gets internships, etc. Super critical, like, you know, I worked very closely with schools, which is like K-12, higher education, edtechs, all three of them put together. In this, you will interact with schools in particular who are very focused on the K-12 education side. Then you speak a lot with the education leaders who are part of the ministry and those areas, etc. Third bit would be the policymakers who are part of the Ministry of HRD or Ministry of Education, etc., who will have those broad guidelines. Sometimes it also happens that, you know, they also want to hear you out or listen as to what can be done better. What are those areas where we are not focused and what is it that we can think of? Three key areas that I would say that, you know, we should look at is, number one is provide a comprehensive set of education tools and platforms. There is an initiative that was run by the government called Samagra Shiksha Abhiyan. Under SSA, there are tons and plenty of initiatives that are run in India, which primarily talks about adoption of technology, building a cloud platform, how do they run things, etc. Number two aspect that you need to again look at here is utilize productivity tools, which is moved from where it was to say that, you know, it should be a pen and paper kind of entry to moving towards something else. Every state, every central nodal body is adopting some of the other kind of productivity tools, which is ensuring a faster response time, a faster engagement time, a better idea of data knowledge, etc. Third bit is supporting any kind of policy changes with innovative technology and education expertise, which means that if we have to adopt, example, Europe, like there is a program called as Degree Apprenticeship Program. It's run by the government. What does it actually mean? India also, there are some of the most fabulous institutes offering degree apprenticeship. But how many have actually heard, how many have gone in for a program, and how many have actually implemented? If you try and understand, this is a very unique program where a student during the course of education is apprenticed into another company. And by the time he or she graduates out of an institute, they have a job in hand. It addresses two problems. The student is self-sufficient to fund his or her own education. And number two, it addresses a huge, huge problem of unemployment. And this is one aspect that government is working in terms of how do we build thematics around it, etc. How do we change the national education policy, which gives more of choice to the student than to somebody who's a policymaker here. To specifically call out, if you have to build a strong digital skilling ecosystem or skill for all or education for all, etc., we have institutes like AICT, we have institutes like CBSE, we have NEOS, we have Ministry of Education, we have NCVET. All of them are focused towards building a great outcome for a student. And most of them work with large organizations, small organizations, but which would benefit also. I think working with state nodal agencies, government bodies is not what we think that they will not accept. They are accepting it big time. They're accepting technologies like, you know, AI was like, you know, called out a few months back. Yeah. They are already adopting it. They're utilizing the strength of startup ecosystem, etc., into their own products, etc. So you can see that even they are moving towards the zone where they say that, you know, hey, response time should be low. Let me address the challenge of skill gap. Let me address the challenge of employability, unemployability much faster, much sooner, etc. So adoption of tech is like pretty high when we talk to all these state or nodal agency organizations.
Wonderful. Right. Anand, just to conclude this round of questions, can you share one successful story which you're really proud of when you Or give an example to others when you look at it from a tech and education kind of model?
Tech and education from the perspective of, like, you know, what should a younger generation look at when they are looking at tech and education? I think anything that they see today, which is the trend, whether it is ChatGPT, your predictive engineering, data and AI, fourth industrial revolution, if you want to think about that, Web3.
Right.
All these are the current possible trends that you can think of. Education, if you look at it as an industry, adopts everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first place where this would start.
True.
When you think about curiousness, students asking questions, etc., ChatGPT can be a good format of ensuring it doesn't dumb down people. You have to think that you have to ask the right question to get a good answer. It's the same thing that in a class of students, the student who raises the hand and asks the question, if the question is not worth it, the teacher or professor may not end up explaining the way how it should be. So right. Asking a question is part of the ChatGPT thought process, etc. So students who are looking at moving into tech for education, they have all the possible skill sets that's outside, which is available today inside, which means that if they're thinking of joining a GSI, a tech company, etc., they should think of an education institute also as a tech institution. As simple right. as that. Tech intensity, which is the focus that you give on adoption, dissemination, having conversation around technology, is as high as any enterprise organization in education, whether it is AI, whether it is fourth industrial revolution, whether it is data and AI thought process, security, privacy. Most of this is all pervasive, all prevalent in education. So I think that for young professionals looking at moving towards how do they understand or deliver technology in education, this is as good as any other thought process that you have. And you'd be doing it for the good of the nation, of building a solid foundation and ecosystem there.
Right. Great. Wonderful. That brings us to the end of the first round of questions. It's time to move to the next and last round. This is the rapid fire round of questions, Anand. And I can see that on your face already, the excitement. And six questions are coming right at you. So are you ready for this?
Absolutely. Please go ahead.
Okay. In 60 seconds, how do you think tech and education industry is shaping up when it comes to holistic development of students that includes areas like moral education, creativity, and critical thinking?
In 60 seconds, right, you're giving me good time. The only bit is like, you know, adoption of tools and technology. It is moving as fast as your... when you look at a tool today, you have got Instagram kind of tools available in education today.
Right.
See, the challenge still remains like, you know, how much of screen time does a student end up giving or putting in, because it's as good as gaming. There mm-hmm. are gaming or gamification tools that's available through OEMs today, which right. can keep a student engaged in a much deeper way. Only bit that is left out because of technology is the moral education part, which is like, you know, probably delivered best as a human connect or interconnect, etc. Today's world is all about, you know, social acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's through a group of cohorts that you would create in a web world. It's not a physical world at all.
Right.
So when you talk about evolution, I think probably the idea of getting moral science is a period. Like I had a separate session for 45 minutes to an hour where teachers would come and tell us about a lot of tales and stories, and then we would imbibe, or, you know, this is how you build your integrity, culture, and thought process. But that's one bit which is like diluted a little bit. But outside of this, any other aspect that you're talking about is very much available today through education.
Okay. In 50 seconds, three suggestions you would give to young professionals aiming to lead in tech in education sector in India.
Three suggestions. I think we touched upon this. I think number one, every institution is a tech institution. So look at it from that perspective in terms of the progress that you can drive in education, in school, in students, in institutes, etc. Number two, build your tech intensity. Because if you talk about AI, you talk about data, you talk about anything which is relevant in today's modern world, all of this is acceptable and all of this is implementable in education as well.
Right.
Third bit is building complementary designs and platforms for technology and skilling. I think that's a super critical element for any youngster who's looking at, like, in a building platform. All national platforms today focus towards democratization. I'm using the word again, which means it should be accessible to all. It gives mm-hmm. a humongous opportunity today for all the youngsters to ensure that they're focused on building education which is accessible to all. So okay. three areas I think they should focus on is every institution, tech institution, build your tech intensity, focus on bringing these technologies to the fore and ensure that education is accessible to all.
Okay, wonderful. In 40 seconds, we are in classroom exciting opportunity or a Black Mirror episode waiting to happen?
I think exciting opportunity. I think we live in a connected world today and a hybrid world. So I think the option of hybrid, whether it is classroom or non-classroom, is not gone. So I think it's reality.
Okay.
It's an exciting.
In 30 world. Seconds, three apps you can't live without.
Three apps. My email, LinkedIn, and WhatsApp.
Okay. In 20 seconds, your first reaction when you hear or see blue screen of death.
Oh, you're dead. There is no expression like you're done. You should just leave the machine and go.
Okay. And the last question, and I'm going to have fun asking you this. Windows or Mac, your favorite?
This is amazing, man. It's like matter sub judice. I'll decide. Come back to you later.
Wonderful. Wonderful, Anand. And with that, we come to the end of today's episode. Thank you so much for making your valuable time. I had a great time hosting you. I hope you had your good time too.
Thanks so much again, Dakshin. This was amazing. Like, I had a lot of fun.
This was definitely fun, Anand. And always wishing you nothing but the best. Thank you so much for making time.
Thanks so much again. Wish you the best.
And with that, we come to the end of today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the audio and video channels of the Deliberate Talks podcast and Pixelated Egg. Join me next week for a Table for One edition. Until then, be curious, be adventurous, and never stop learning. Cheers.